Okay, Mr. Mix.
One is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. Two can be as bad as one. It's the loneliest number since the number one. No is the saddest experience you'll ever know. Yes, it's the saddest experience you'll ever know. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know. It's just no good anymore since you went away. Now I spend my time just making rhymes of yesterday. Because one is the loneliest number that you'll ever do. One is the loneliest number that you'll ever know.
Everybody, and welcome to this installment of the Super Podcast. I'm your host, Super Marcy, as always, because no one else would be hosting my podcast. And you are joining me today as I embark on a brand new adventure. A bit of an adventure where it's just going to be me and a guest, and we're just going to talk about whatever we want, and hopefully by the end of it, you'll be inspired to do something awesome with your life, if you're not already. So there we have it. That's my very brief introduction to what I'm doing, but you'll understand that once you listen in. My first guest for, I guess, this little mini series, if you will, someone I've known for a long time, but we've never actually done a podcast together, which is kind of strange now that I think of it. And I can see he's like nodding as I say this because we are looking at each other on video because that's a great way to engage with someone. But you listeners won't get that advantage. I'm sorry. You just have to listen to our beautiful voices. please welcome for the first time on a Super Podcast, Justin Xavier. Hello.
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 How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Fantastic.
That's great. Now you've officially we've popped your Super Podcast cherry, so you're no longer a virgin on this podcast.
That was quick.
Yeah, it's pretty painless. Quick and painless. Well, and as we go on, you'll start to enjoy it a bit more.
All right. Yeah, I was expecting worse. Everything's
yeah.
good.
No, I'm very gentle. Very
I
gentle.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening, maybe they know your name, maybe they don't know your name. Let's give them a little history. about who you are, but we can actually say how we met. Sadly, it's not through some tragic online dating thing, which are always funny.
True.
I can't even remember. I believe it was through Joe Blow back in the day.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was on the MFC.
It would have been on MFC or the forums, or it led to MFC, which is Movie Fan Central. Right. Which
and then we took it over to Facebook.
Yeah.
And friends since I would assume 2009.
Yeah, that sounds right. And
yeah,
I think
that's
you're,
when I
Yeah, you'd be one of
the MFC.
Yeah, you'd be like one of the only few people left that I still talk to from those days.
Well, that's a huge compliment.
Well, absolutely. Why wouldn't I? You're cool.
I'll take it.
You're a cool
thank
dude.
Thank you.
You're a cool dude. And I guess more recently it's kind of gone over to Binge Media with those cocksuckers.
Yeah.
Who are always hilarious.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, obviously, we've known each other a long time, and as you've lived your life, I've kind of followed it on your adventures on Facebook. So you've done quite a lot of stuff, but why don't you tell us, like, I guess you've kind of, I guess the last few years you've made the big move from, like, where you were living to the other side of the country. I don't know my geography. I'm just assuming it's on the other side of the country.
Yes, it was the other side of the United States.
There we go. Why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and how you've gotten to where you are? I'm going to make you do the talking. I'm just going to listen and be interested in everything.
I couldn't find like a good place to actually start. Because there's a lot of ways that I've told this story, and there's a lot of beginnings to
you have to tell it in a way that you've never told it before.
Challenge.
Yeah, I'm opening up a challenge live on the podcast for you right now.
So I will start the story right after I've graduated college, which was in 2012. And I moved to North Carolina. I went to school in Ohio at Miami University. I got a bachelor's in creative writing because I was always interested in writing.
High five. High five. Writing's awesome. Yeah. I'm trying to high five you through a camera. It doesn't really work.
We got as close as we could.
Yeah.
And since I knew how to read,
like 2 years ago when you learned how to read?
I learned how to read at age 24.
Yeah.
I decided I wanted to also write. Yeah.
I'm teasing.
No, but I remember vividly, like, when I was five, we had a typewriter in my house, and I would find paper, and I would write stories about, and, you know, they were terrible because I'm five, but I would, you know, type out one full page of whatever came to me, and I would fold it up as if it was a book. And then I would show it to my parents.
I'm so relating to this right now. I did the same thing.
Good. And then I would just grab like 10 pieces of printer paper and I would just fold them in half, staple them together and go, this is going to be a comic book. And then
God.
I would just fill it.
And
the
know.
Story ended when the comic book was over. I was like, I
so
only have one page
that.
Left. I'll just really quickly end this story right now. Like, and one. Like, I don't want to draw six more panels. It's done now. And I have probably over 100 comic books that I made. Long story short, I always wanted to be a storyteller. And I was always told that is not a legitimate way to make money. Like, nobody who's a writer ever makes money. And I just thought that was ridiculous because every person who ever had a book that I had read was a person who made money writing a book. Every book I've ever read made money for the person who wrote it. So I just didn't believe anyone. We were like, you're not going to make money as a writer. So I fast forward all the way to college, and I decide to you know, acquiesce to everyone else's request and become a business major, and I didn't like that. So I switched to creative writing and took some screenwriting courses, took some other kinds of writing courses. I also always wanted to be in film. And, I would always, from the day that DVDs were invented, I was listening to the commentaries and watching every bonus feature and just picking apart and learning everything I possibly could about filmmaking. And when I was in high school, I used to go to the library every day after school, and I would rent 5 DVDs, because that's the most you could rent in one day, and I would take them home and I would watch all of them. And I would, the ones I liked, I would watch the bonus features, I would listen to commentaries. The ones I didn't like, I would go and return the next day and replace them with 2, 3, 4 new movies, however many it happened.
You sound exactly like me. The only difference is, because I'm a little bit older than you, I still had VHS. So in high school, I'd grab 10 videos, watch them in 2 days, return them, grab another 10. But then when DVDs came out, it would be all the extra features, just take everything in, learn everything possible, study everything, go online, and
every once in a while, if you stayed after the credits, the VHS would have some making up something.
Yeah, or just be on IMDb or whatever and just look up every little detail about things. I just want to learn everything.
Yes, that's how I figured out which movies I wanted to rent next. I'd be like, I like this one. I'm going to look at everything else that this guy made.
Mm.
And then I would just rent all those. And it became like my own film school that I taught myself. And yeah, my wealth of film knowledge is huge. I went to school, studied creative writing, watched more movies, and graduate 2012. And I decide, all right, now it's time to do this, whatever this is. And so I went to North Carolina, which is where my family lived, and I just started sending out headshots and resumes to casting directors and agencies and anyone who I thought might be able to somehow help me. And for the most part, everyone ignored everything I sent because it was super, unprofessional and new. My resume wasn't an acting resume. It was just my actual job resume and pretty clear when you do that, you know nothing about acting.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I knew literally nothing about the business. So luckily there was one agent who replied to me and said, if you're serious about becoming an actor, you need to be in an acting class, an ongoing acting class forever, and just become a better actor. And luckily for you, one of the best acting coaches on the entire East Coast is in Charlotte, which is where you are. So I recommend you go there right now and start taking classes. So I did. The next week, I started taking classes, and the coach thought that I was intelligent and talented enough that he couldn't believe I didn't have an agent. And he knew all of the agents in the Southeast and made a phone call. 2 days later, I had a meeting with an agent. And the next day, I had an agent. I was signed. And it was incredibly quick how that happened for me. I think there's so many people who do not have that amount of luck, which I just literally lucked into having an agent that quickly after starting acting. It was, I think, a total of 3 months after I was I'm acting now, that I had an agent and was going on auditions for big shows like Vampire Diaries, The Walking Dead, Turn, and a lot of commercials. I was doing a lot of background on commercials, and it was an incredibly rewarding period of time to have just fallen into. And so over the course of the next 3 years, I just learned everything that I could and got better at acting and booked more roles. And in 2013, I decided I don't want to just sit around and wait for someone to hand me a role. I have to create my own things. And I was already writing, and I had written a few screenplays at that time and a novel. And I had a friend approach me from my acting class, because, we were both kind of comedians, and we like to laugh a lot in class and make each other laugh. And she came up to me and she was like, would you want to do a web series together? And I said, yeah, that sounds amazing. And she said, great, I have no ideas for a web series. And I said, I do. And a week later, we were writing a web series. We had our first meeting at a Starbucks, and we sat down and we discussed, it's called Door to Door, the web series, about my own personal experiences as a door-to-door salesman. It's mockumentary style, like The Office. And we started, you know, fleshing out who the characters were and what the storyline was going to be for the season, because we knew we needed a consistent storyline if we were going to hold people's interest. And we got to work. And a few months later, we had written 21 episodes because we decided that's how many we wanted to write. And we put up a Kickstarter and we raised a little over $20,000. And we quit our jobs and we got to work. And we, you know, I had filmed things before, like when I was in high school, just on like camcorders, and they weren't great things. They were just spoofs of movies that we liked. Like, we did a spoof of The Matrix and we called it The Parabola. We did a spoof of Saw and we called it Rusty Spoon. And then I decided I wanted to make an original film, which we never did actually get completely finished because our editor kind of gave up. But it was about a blind assassin and his caveman partner and their quest to save the world. And
what? Okay.
I don't know if she had done much. I know that she went to school for editing and filming and all that sort of stuff. So she had a lot of expertise in terms of color correcting and editing and sound editing and all those sorts of things that you need for post-production. And then we had a friend named Joe Chiazza, who started a film company called Five Ahead Films. And he had spent, you know, the last few years acquiring as much film equipment as he possibly could and just becoming a master at cinematography. So the three of us, with our powers combined, put together this web series. And at the end of it, we shot 21 episodes, all of which I'm extremely proud of, some of which are much better than others. But it was a great experience and an amazing journey and learning opportunity. And now to be able to say at any point, like, I have 21 episodes of web series that I produced, created, wrote, directed, star in. And they're all available on Vimeo.com or Funny or Die or TheBestSeriesEver.com is our official website. And it was amazing. And, you know, we finished that. And it wasn't as successful as we had hoped. Like, we didn't, like, gain a rabid following or a crazy fan base afterwards. Like, our fan base at the start of the show and at the end of the show was the exact same number of people. I think it was just always the same people. So we were like, well, we could do another Kickstarter and do season two, but we would just be asking the same people for money again. And it's not like the fans were super vocal or like crying out for more. So I just said, let's shelve it for now. I want to move to Los Angeles and I want to, just be where the filming is. At that point, North Carolina had cut its film incentives, so all the shows that were shooting there were moving out. Some of them moved to Atlanta, some of them moved to Canada, some moved to South Africa, Homeland moved to South Africa, and there was nothing left. Mm. It was slim picking. So I could have either moved to Atlanta or Los Angeles. And Atlanta felt like, you know, I'd just be doing the same thing I was already doing in North Carolina, which was auditioning for a co-star here, a small role here, little stuff, and I'd be in a talent pool that was the same. I didn't want to be in the same place. I didn't want to do the same thing again, so I decided on Los Angeles. And at the beginning of 2015, I made the move to Los Angeles, which is where I reside now. And it's been a whirlwind journey here too. I joined another acting class, and we were making short films and little internet comedy videos. And late 2015, I booked a feature film called Shared Rooms, which is, it's like Love Actually if all the characters were men. So it's a gay themed film. It's set at Christmas. It's three interconnected love stories. And the first thing that I recognized that I loved about it was the happiness. It was just such a lighthearted film, and it shows everything in such a positive way. I had seen so many gay films before that were just about struggling and how hard it was and how mean everyone is, and or they were like porn. Yeah. And I was like, none of these movies are ever going to be mainstream. Like, none of them focus on any truth. They're just, or if they do focus on truth, it's about like painful truths. And there's so many gay films are just, they're not well shot. But this one, when I read the script, because I got the full script before even I got my callback, I loved it. All the storylines are just, like, it's just people. They're just people living their lives and dealing with, you know, the regular day-to-day problems. Like, one storyline is a married couple, and all their friends are having babies, but they don't want to have a baby. And then all of a sudden, one of their nephews shows up on their doorstep and says, I got kicked out of my house, I have nowhere to go. So now all of a sudden they're parents of a teenager. And then there's another story about two roommates who live together, and one of them has a crush on the other one. And due to, you know, crazy circumstances, they're forced to share a bed for a week. And then my storyline is, you know, a guy who's alone on Christmas. And, you know, because he's completely alone, he goes on a hookup app and he swipes right. Someone comes over. And he thinks it's just going to be a one-night thing, and then he ends up staying for the rest of the holiday season. And all the storylines are just like, they're just people living in a situation, and it's a comedy, and it's lighthearted, and it's truthful, and it's funny, and it was really funny, and I really liked it. And so I accepted the role, and it's been playing festivals throughout 2016. It opened in San Diego, where I got to see it for the first time. It opened in Mumbai, it played in Tel Aviv, and it won the Audience Award for Best Comedy when it was in San Diego, and it's playing a bunch more festivals, some of which I can't announce yet, because it's not my film, but but it was a fantastic experience. And even just last night, we recorded the DVD commentary, which has been a lifelong goal of mine since I learned what a DVD commentary was. I was like, I need to do this. Like, I want to do this. And so when they were like, all right, come over, we're going to do the commentary, I like lost my shit. I was so excited to do this commentary. And we did it last night, and we, you know, we had a few glasses of wine, and we watched the movie and we talked about the movie, and it was great. It was hilarious. And that's where I am now. If you have any questions about how filling in some of those gaps or anything, feel free to.
I've just been sitting here lovingly listening to your stories, because it's fascinating. I love listening to. I can hear my own feedback here. Great. I just love listening to people talk about their life, what they're doing, how they got to where they are. I mean, once you got there, yes, to LA, do you find it difficult to get anywhere? Like, how do you go about moving somewhere new, completely new, and there's just so much, like, competition there, I guess, because everyone's after the same thing.
Right. There are millions more actors in Los Angeles than there were in Charlotte. That's for sure.
Well, I'd imagine so.
The biggest thing I noticed right away was it's a lot harder to find an agent who wants to sign you for theatrical, which the theatrical is like film and TV, and then commercials. A lot of people think theatrical means theater, but it's film and TV. I mean, obviously, I got very lucky in Charlotte to be signed with someone theatrically 3 months after I started. But in Los Angeles, there's so much more competition, and it's a lot harder to get that person who's willing to take the risk on you theatrically. Mainly because the casting directors don't want to bring you in unless you've already booked a bunch of film and TV. So it's kind of that, how do you get started if you have to have already been started to start?
Yeah.
Thing.
Which I think really is pretty true in any job, as it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you need 2 years' experience before we'll even consider hiring you. And if everyone's saying that, where do you get 2 years' experience?
Exactly.
So, you know, they want you to have done 5 co-star roles on a TV show before they'll sign you. Where are you supposed to get the 5 co-star roles if you don't have an agent to get you in there? So I very recently actually signed with a manager who is working with me and fighting for me to get those types of auditions. And he said, you know, it's a challenge to, you know, get the casting directors to take a chance on you because you have 1 co-star role on Turn on AMC. And then you have a web series, an independent web series that, you know, they haven't heard of. And then you have a couple of independent movies, which frankly, you know, they didn't get into Sundance. They're not like huge worldwide phenomenon. So it's a matter of him really pushing for me and me just continuing to produce and create my own material until all of that kind of lines up.
Do you regret any of it?
Absolutely not. No, I every step along the way has been either an incredible, incredible step forward or an incredible learning experience. You know, even the times that I've completely horrendously failed were times that I was able to go, okay, well, I know what not to do next time. And I know that those moments are also the times that a lot of people go, okay, well, I guess this isn't for me then. Like, I should just quit and go home. And I've had a lot of friends who have, you know, thrown in the towel. They go home or they just go, you know, acting, I can't do it anymore. But I can't see my life in any other way. Like, I've never thought to do anything else, and I don't think I could be happy doing anything else. So, you know, why would I stop?
Yeah. I guess a lot of people do find it hard when they fail or something doesn't work out that they just pack up and go, but I think it takes so much more to look at that experience and actually find your lesson or, you know, in there. And I know that, like, I like to look at my own mistakes as a lesson of something that I, you know, something I can learn from, something I can do better from. But it's so hard to, like, explain that to people who kind of just want to pack up and leave, like, why they shouldn't and why it is a learning experience. So it's kind of, to hear you say that as well is just, I got to say props, because not a lot of people do that or even have the balls to say that too. No one likes to say, well, I've failed at something or I've made a mistake. Well, fucking everyone does.
Yeah. There are some careers where you go into it just knowing you're probably going to fail a lot. Like, you know, if you're a great baseball player, you miss 70% of the swings you take. And they just, you know, they know, like, oh, if I'm batting 300, I'm really good. Like, which means you're a failure. Like, you're a huge failure. But that means that they're great. And when you get into a career like acting, you know, there's a higher percentage of failure that literally everyone goes through. And maybe it's the higher percentage of failure that makes it harder, or maybe it's the fact that people go into it assuming they can be an overnight success. But like any career, it takes just a lot of time and a lot of consistency and a lot of practice, and, you know, things eventually pay off, even if it takes years. You know, I guess I've been at this now for 4 years officially. I've just recently started, you know, gaining actual traction. But that's, you know, that's how it is.
I think kind of weeds out the weak from the strong or the motivated from the not motivated. As unfortunate as that may be, if you're just going to pack up and run after a failure, well, goodbye.
Yeah, more, thanks for making more room for the rest of us.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, where do you go from here? I mean, God, I'm like, wow, we've just said something so profound. It's like, now where do we go from here?
Let's just take a moment to allow the audience to really reflect.
Just reflect on your own failures and just realize that it's not a bad thing. You got to learn from it.
Absolutely.
It's almost like it's like a relationship. You know, one didn't work. You look back on it. Instead of just being upset about it, you go, well, this and that didn't work clearly. So maybe I got to try this, this and that. It might, you know, be better for the next one.
Yeah.
It's the same with everything else. And I think you're always going to make mistakes, but you always got to learn from them too.
Yep, absolutely.
If you don't keep doing the same thing over and over again, I mean, you're not going to get better at it either.
No.
I mean, you got to, and how good of an actor are you? I don't know, man. You got to convince me of how good you are.
I didn't know that was this kind of podcast. No. Lure you into a false sense of security and then test you.
Yeah, now it's your audition. Go.
Well, if there was a role, then, you know, maybe I'd have prepared something. But no, this is all this stream of consciousness. This is just me being me. Because, you know, that's kind of what acting is. Honestly, like, the biggest hurdle every actor has to overcome is the fear of being themselves. Like, overcoming the fact that I'm going to be on camera revealing my true self and my true feelings, that's the scariest thing. It's not the failure. It's not any of that. It's the fear of being seen. And that's mostly what every actor has to overcome, is it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be myself. What I have to say, it's valuable, and I am worthy of what I say that I want. And I think that's true for everybody. I think it's amplified as an actor just due to the amount of rejection that is inevitable.
Yeah. You gotta be strong.
Yeah. And it sounded like you for a moment, you were about to ask, what's next? Like, where do I go from here?
I was more thinking, where does this conversation go? Because it was just so profound of what we were saying. Like,
gotcha. Yeah.
But I don't know. Like, what are your hopes and dreams, Justin?
lots of them. I really want. There's a comic book called Sex Criminals,
which I know of. I haven't read it. I know of it.
You know of it. You've heard of it. Okay. Yes. Good. Most people haven't heard of it.
When I first heard of it, I'm like, what is it? What? Sex Criminals?
Right. No, yeah. It's a very startling title. You don't know what to expect.
Yeah. I'm like, wait, what's it about? No, I don't know what it's about. All right, then.
But it's written by Matt Fraction and Chip Zdarsky. And it's about a guy and a girl who, every time they orgasm, they literally stop time. And so they decide that they're going to use this power to rob banks. So they, you know, they have sex outside of a bank.
That's totally what I would do too.
It's absolutely. And the comic is brilliant. It's one of the funniest, smartest, most profound things I've ever read. Wrapped in a blanket of just filth. that's like my favorite thing, is when you can be profound and you're being filthy, you've nailed it.
High five.
Which is about It's what I loved about the movie Swiss Army Man. And it's why I wrote my novel Deviant. And so Sex Criminals is right up my alley. It's my absolute favorite comic book right now. And I heard that they're working on developing a TV series based on the comic. And my ultimate goal would be to play the lead on that show. If you've read the comic, I think John, who's the main guy, I think he kind of looks a lot like me. And considering how much I love this book, I think I have a chance. And I don't know how close the show is to actually becoming a thing. Or
all right, let's stop talking. Let's start a petition. Let's get this thing rolling. Let's do it. Let's get the campaign rolling.
The more people are shouting out for me to play the character, I think the better. But I love it, and more than anything else in the world, I would love to play that character on that show. I have a few film scripts that I've written that I want to direct and star in. One of them I wrote with our very own Jimmy O. I'm sure you remember Jimmy O.
Well, I know Jimmy very well, not very well, but as well as I could know him from across the pond.
Yeah, Jimmy O. Jimmy O is the sweetest man alive.
And I can believe that.
Jimmy O. Yeah, he's the sweetest person. And he had an idea for a script, and he approached me about it, and I decided that I wanted to help him write it. So we wrote Sick for Toys, which is a scramble. It's a Christmas horror film about a woman who every year gets the same gift for Christmas from her brother, and that is a man that he has kidnapped for her and drugged and tied up in the garage for her to live at the witness. And that becomes her Christmas toy. And so that's the general premise. And this year things go differently because the person who's been kidnapped, his friend is on the looking for him and stumbles upon the house where he is located. And so it becomes this kind of cat and mouse. It's a lot like Psycho. It's a lot like the old 70s Black Christmas. It's a lot of things, but it's very dark, and it's funny in a way that it shouldn't be, and it's extremely Christmas. So I can't wait to make that movie. And we're working on, you know, getting funding right now, getting the right cast, the perfect cast together, because it's going to take some really, really great actors. And that's something that I'm working on that I can't wait to make. And then the other film is called The Wheelman, and it's the true story of Robert Smalls, who was a slave during the Civil War, who escaped slavery by stealing a Confederate warship in the middle of the night, sailing it through the Charleston Harbor into the Union blockade, and freeing himself and 13 other people.
And but that really that happened?
That's a true story. It's a completely true story that I was absolutely shocked that I'd never heard before.
I've never heard that. I mean, yeah, I'm not from the country, but come on, I would have heard of that, surely.
It's appalling to me that this story was not taught to me in school. This is one of the most uplifting, inspiring, powerful stories of overcoming adversity that I've ever heard. And after the war, he goes on to become, during the war, the second he's free, the Union Army puts him in command of the ship, and he's a captain for the rest of the Civil War. After that, he's elected governor of South Carolina, where he reforms education. He's Robert Smalls is one of the most amazing men that I have ever heard of, and I don't know why I've never heard his name before. Mm. So when I heard it, I was so inspired that I went and did all the research I could. I bought every book about him that I could find. There's not a lot of them, and I wrote a script. So I have the script. It's ready. We're doing a reading next month of it, actually, at Emerson College. Is hosting a reading of it where they're hiring actors to come in and read the script for an audience, just as a way to kind of, for me as the writer to hear it out loud, as a way for actors to, you know, just do a cold read and then to generate interest in the project.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's so cool that you're just there, you know, you're doing everything, like a bit of everything. But I think too, I guess when you want to be in film like you do, I think you kind of need to be able to do a bit of everything, because sometimes you do need to make your own opportunities.
Absolutely. All the people that I respect the most who are already in the industry did it themselves. They started with nothing and they worked their way in, and now they're either A-listers, they're directors, they're producers, they're where they always wanted to be. And anytime I start to think, you know, I don't know if this is going to happen. Like, this is challenging. Like, I'm not where I wanted to be yet. I just remember, like, it's not up to me, but as long as I keep at it, I'll get there. And I remember all the stories that I've heard of, like, Kevin Smith and Billy Bob Thornton and Matt Damon and all these people who, they just worked. They just worked and worked and worked. And eventually it happened.
Yeah. I mean, you just look at my sister, who is, you know, she's big time in her producing of films. And she started off volunteering and she went from one thing to another. She would work jobs just to support herself by volunteering, at a film. And then she just worked so hard for so many years. And now she has her own production studio with Reese, and they're making the bacon.
That's fantastic.
It's pretty incredible. Like, I look at that and all the hard work she does, and it inspires me, especially that, she's got her own, like, health issues, as I do. She's got twins that are 3 years old, and she's still fucking doing it.
Wow.
As I look at it, there's no excuse.
Yeah, there's not. That's a great story and a great thing to always look back on. Like,
absolutely. If you want to feel inspired, just read up about her, and, you know. Absolutely.
There's so many.
But you notice it's the thing that there's in common. It's not like someone just lucked out on something. I mean, yeah, that may happen, but everybody just works so hard to get where they are. But you got to make your own opportunities too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Luck only gets you so far.
And I think you're doing the right thing, by the way. I approve.
Thanks.
Thumbs up on video. Yeah, I've absolutely enjoyed listening to all your stories.
Great.
But I have discovered recently as like an hour ago, something very nerdy about you. Can you please tell everybody about it? If you don't want to, I'll understand, but I'm just completely fascinated. And I know that you should never judge a book by its cover, but I look at you, I'm not going to lie, you're a very beautiful man. You do not look like the kind of person that would be into this, just based solely on what I've seen out in the open. But I just think it's amazing. I love it. So if you don't mind, if you want the world to hear, or all the podcast listeners to hear, can you tell us about it?
More than happy to talk about it. It's been a part of my life for a very long time. It's a game called Magic the Gathering, and I learned how to play when I was 14 years old, and I've pretty much played ever since. There were a couple years in there I took off, and but they release about 4 new main sets every year, and every time a new set comes out, a new expansion set, I try to make it to at least one tournament, one pre-release event, and play with the cards and just kind of keep myself refreshed on what's going on in the game, because I love it. I just it's fantasy and it's just a fun game. It's like chess with dragons mixed in with Pokemon and regular card game rules. It's Dungeons and Dragons. It's everything. It's all, you know, you cast creatures and they attack each other, and, you know, you cast spells to hurt each other and deal damage and try to bring each other's life totals from 20 to 0. It's a very simplistic at the end of the day. It just has a lot of rules that make it a completely different game every time you play it. And so today, actually, I was at a Magic the Gathering pre-release event for the new set called Eldritch Moon. and it was super fun. I did pretty well. You know, I won a couple of prize packs, which is all I ever expect to do, you know, just go and have fun and get a prize or two. And actually, one of my greatest, like, creativity inspirations is the lead designer of the game named Mark Rosewater, who every Monday writes an article about game design. And he ties it into a lot of different things, because he used to be a staff writer on Roseanne. He used to live in Hollywood. And ultimately, he decided that wasn't what he wanted to do with the rest of his life. And he went and started working for Magic and became a game designer. And the lessons that he learned about game design apply to storytelling, apply to just being a creative person. And he's always writing about just ways to work on creativity, because everyone is creative. They just may not have developed the skill yet. And a lot of people think that they're not creative, that they can't be creative. And there is some element of innate talent to it, as with anything, but it's also a skill. And as any skill, you can work to improve it. Mm-hmm. So he gives a lot of advice on how to be more creative and how to use creativity to your advantage, whether you want to design games or whether you want to act or whether you want to write. And every Monday I log on to the Magic the Gathering website and I read whatever he has to write. Sometimes it's an article where he breaks down card by card how he designed this new set, and sometimes it's like, I'm going to just tie in all of my failures as a game designer back to lessons of myself failing in the dating world or failing in Hollywood, and explain how each of those failures led to me to a better place. And it's always inspiring. It's always fascinating. It's very helpful. It's very funny. It's very beneficial to me. And it also helps that I play Magic, and so I get all of the nerd references that he makes and all the silly.
It is so adorable. I just can't get over it. I love it so much that you're such a nerd for it. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah. No, I when I'm nerdy about something, like, I go all in.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a little bit about me. I know that they're working on a Magic the Gathering film right now, and there's a planeswalker in the game that I kind of look like, and I think I could probably play him in the movie if anyone wants to start that campaign going as well.
Yeah, I think we need, like, a whole bunch of campaigns, just, like, get Justin in this, this, and this.
Yeah. I'm for it.
I mean, I don't care, like, what the role is. Be like, oh, there's a new, like, live-action Disney princess. Oh, he could play that.
Why not? You know?
You know, it's a role. Who cares?
Yeah. That one might offend people. but I would happily play the Planeswalker Jace Bellerin.
I have no idea what that is, and I love it. Oh, my God. It's so amazing, because I feel like I'm such a big, like, nerd or geek, whatever you want to fucking call it. Like, I grew up, I was the outcast. Nobody was into the stuff I was into. Nobody watched bloody Star Trek or Star Wars, or nobody cared about, like, movies. Nobody read books. Nobody collected anything. I was the outcast, and I was a girl. Being the girl who was into that stuff, unheard of. And now everybody's just suddenly on this whole bandwagon. It's like, you're taking away my identity now, people. But I know that I was truly into it before anyone else. I mean, here I am. I'm in my 30s. I collect toys. I collect dolls. I collect action figures. I like building Lego.
As you should.
Yeah.
They're fun things.
I think I'm cool.
I love the nerd revolution. You're super cool, by the way.
I was super cool before it was super cool to be this cool. Just putting it out there. You know, it's kind of weird, like, when you grow up and you're, like, the only one who's, like, into movies and you're there, like, you bring your friend to the video store and I'm there for 3 hours picking one movie.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'm walking out with, like, 10 and then I'm like, oh, finish them. Like, this is it. I don't know how the fuck I did this in high school. You know, in high school, watching, like, 10 movies every 2 days, reading, like, 4 or 5 novels in a week. Where did I have time to do that and all my schoolwork and attend school? I don't know. It's probably because I didn't sleep. I had insomnia in high school.
I'm sure that helped.
I'm like, no wonder. Like, it's insane. But this all just started, like, before high school. I was reading Stephen King when I was, like, 11. Who does that?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I mean, the nerds like us.
We're the original nerds, man.
Yeah, I was reading Game of Thrones when I was 13, so.
I haven't read Game of Thrones yet, but I'm going to start reading Game of Thrones.
You probably should.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I will. I have so much to read, it's crazy.
Good, you'll read like 7 books in a week and you'll be great.
Yeah, exactly, like, I don't know how I did that in high school. Where was I reading, like, fucking all these books, and I look back now, like, where did I have time? Watch all these movies and, like, discover everything. It's crazy. And,
it's a skip.
I know I kind of had told you this, just on messaging. This week's podcast is the main podcast is about, the movies that we watch to fit our moods and emotions. And, I know you had some, so why don't you tell us? Or tell me, tell us, whoever. what are some of your, like, what movies do you watch to, I don't know, pick you up, or you watch when you're down, or inspire you movies?
Well, the absolute go-to pick-me-up movie is usually Hot Fuzz.
Oh, I've been watching that this week, too.
That movie always makes me feel great.
You've got a mustache. I know.
You and your monkey. Does he mean me or that? That's brilliant. It's a brilliant film. Every single line is quotable.
Yes.
I love that movie.
Thank you. High five.
High five.
Through the video.
That movie, The World's End, absolutely always just makes me happy. Just put the smile on my face. It's so honest about, like, feeling nerdy and feeling like an outcast. And just, it's funny. It's like a really, really lighthearted way of looking at it, almost clinical depression. And it doesn't matter what mood you're in, like, seeing that character go through what he goes through and find love is the happiest you can be.
I didn't hear what you said because this thing kind of messed up. Which movie are you talking about?
The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was one of my other ones I used to watch when I couldn't sleep.
I probably watched that movie at least once a week in high school, like for all of high school. And maybe, you know, I shouldn't have watched it in high school. Like, maybe that's why I'm so depraved now.
Yeah, I could tell you some stories about that, but we'll do that when we're not recording.
Okay. Yeah, we'll keep that for the after show.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, now that's, you know, the Edgar Wright works for me.
I do. I love watching Scott Pilgrim. Just for its sheer insanity, because I don't know what it is about that movie.
I don't either. It's just happy. Like, it just makes me happy.
Mm-hmm.
And what was I just thinking about? In terms of just pure inspiration and, like, go-for-it-ness, Whiplash has been really working for me lately.
I need to see Whiplash. Just...
Need
all my like film critic credentials are thrown out the window because I said I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no, you're not even officially a fan of movies anymore until you've seen it.
You can see the shame on my face.
It's yeah, you look ashamed.
I am.
You haven't seen Wicked?
And this, again, this is a movie that came up on a previous show where Whiplash, having started off as a short movie, you know, that kind of inspiration for filmmaking, and why haven't I seen it? I don't know, because I'm an idiot.
I know that this isn't, like, one of the most widely loved movies in the world, but The Departed? It's my movie comfort food. I know every line like the back of my hand, and it just makes me giddy.
And the funny thing is, I can say that about Goodfellas and Wolf of Wall Street. Like, just they're two movies. I don't care what mood I'm in. I can just put them on and watch them and quote them and laugh and enjoy it. And oh my god, I want to watch them both now.
Sounds like you know what you're doing today.
Yeah, I'm going to go sniff some cocaine off a hooker's ass. I'm going to live the Jordan Belfort lifestyle. What?
Well, I meant just have a Scorsese marathon, but if you want to, like, live the movie, then...
No, I've got some Quaaludes packed away, you know. No.
Great! You're good, you're set. Got a great night ahead of you.
Oh, yeah. Who knows where I'll end up, in a ditch somewhere, probably.
But you won't know you're in the ditch until the next day when the police show up.
Then I can tell my story, like, through the eyes of someone on drugs who think they did the perfect thing.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Those are some answers that came to me just now.
Yeah, alright, so... Because I'm putting you through the paces of, like, movies. Oh, hello, arm action. I mean, what?
Was stretching.
I know, but arms are really attractive.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. What about, like, your all-time favorite film, like, ever?
Magnolia.
Okay.
Magnolia.
I admit to watching that quite a lot.
You've meant to, or you have watched
it? No, I have.
Okay.
I've watched it many times,
I can't say it's the best movie I've ever seen, but it's my favorite movie, and it's just 3 hours of, like, propulsiveness, just, like, every scene keeps you on the edge of your seat, and that ending is just batshit crazy, and, you know, it's about how, like, you know, we put so much pressure on ourselves for all these things that they don't matter. Like, because at the end of the day, maybe it's going to rain frogs and then all your problems are going to seem like they don't matter at all. You're going to be like, you know what, maybe we should all just get along, try and run away from it. It was nothing. What, you know, why were we wasting our time? And that's ultimately what that movie's about for me, is, like, just, it doesn't fucking matter. You know, whatever you're so caught up and worried about, like, it doesn't matter. Because if it started raining frogs right now, you're best friends with everybody. Because literally every person on the street, you're going to be like, hey, did you see how it rained frogs? He's on this podcast right now and he can suck it.
All of that I did not get because this video thing just froze up and I didn't hear a word you said.
Man, I was being mean to Jim Law.
Oh, you gotta redo it. I'll edit it in.
So I know that Jim Law hates Magnolia and will hate the fact that I've listed it as my favorite film, but Jim Law is not on this podcast right now, so he can suck it.
Because he's a cocksucker.
He's a cocksucker.
That's right.
I can't wait. I'm hoping that when Shared Rooms comes out on DVD or when it's available on Netflix... shortly thereafter, it will be on Netflix sometime in 2017. I'm gonna go on to the Binge Media podcast or see if they'll let me on and promote the film because it's about a whole bunch of literal cocksuckers.
What's it like to have played a literal cocksucker?
It was great. You know, I don't know. It was a great, and I love the movie. So ultimately, you know, playing a person is playing a person.
Exactly.
And, you know?
There you go. You don't care. That's how you roll.
Yeah. How I roll.
There's no prejudice. Like, you're gonna play this character? Fine. Mm-hmm. Down with it.
Yeah. If it's a character I relate to, I'll play it. And I related to a lot of aspects of the character I played in that film. So.
There you go. I was going to ask you more about your favorite things, but I kind of, like, blanked on them.
You blanked on my favorite things?
No, like, what I was going to ask you.
Oh.
You know, you got to get to know you a little better. Like, you said, right, favorite movie. Favorite,
right. Oh,
like,
yeah.
You know, other things. Or you can just tell me, it's fine. Or you can ask me, because, you know, I can't ask everything all the time.
Well, it's your podcast, so...
Yeah.
I mean...
I'm happy for whoever I'm talking to ask me anything they like.
Okay. What's your favorite movie?
Stand By Me.
That's a good movie.
It is a good movie.
That is a great film.
I almost like feel like crying whenever I bring it up, and it's everything to me as a person. Because I grew up with it. When I was that age, I just went through so much of the same stuff that the characters went through. I was the main character in a lot of ways, and just the struggles he feels with, like, how he's a writer and I was a writer, and I was just, like, going through the frustrations of all of that at 12 years old. And when I watch it now, I just break down crying because it's just everything just comes flooding back to me.
Because you remember that time you found that dead body.
That is true, I did. And all those bullies were picking on me, and I told him to suck my fat one.
it's amazing how similar your life is to theirs.
It really is. Yeah, and it happens that the book of short stories, Different Seasons by Stephen King, which Stand By Me was from, or The Body as it was called, just happens to be my favorite book.
Oh.
Which also features the Shawshank Redemption.
Well, there you go.
So there you
That's
go.
A fantastic film as well.
And it's a fantastic book. And I think both movies just outdid what he wrote in a really strange way. But I just love that book with the short story, well, novellas in there. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Frank Darabont needs to get back to adapting Stephen King stuff because he does it better than anyone.
And what about, what was your favorite book that's not a comic?
favorite book? I've read a lot of, like, really, really great, obscure books that I can't remember. Yeah, like, I had a really, really great creative writing professor when I was in college who assigned, like, 15 books that were... Every single one of them was brilliant. They were, like, one of them was called U.S., like, U period, S period, exclamation point. And it was about, like, Upton Sinclair. And there was one called I Am Not Sidney Poitier, which was just a brilliant, brilliant book, like, deconstructing race and growing up in America and... I really liked the Virgin Suicides.
Yeah.
It's a great book. Way better than the movie.
Mm.
As, you know, it's almost always the book's better than the movie. You know, growing up, I liked Game of Thrones. Was like, that was my shit. And everyone made fun of me for it because it was too nerdy. And now everyone watches Game of Thrones. And
yeah.
I was just texting my friend the other day, who's the person who introduced me to the Game of Thrones books, and I said, I love the fact that we currently live in a world where I can walk into a room and just shout the words, Game of Thrones, and I'll probably have 10 new friends. Whereas when I was in high school, we walked into a room and shouted Game of Thrones, we'd have had rocks thrown at us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's been 10 years, and the shift is so, it's overwhelming. What's happened since, like, Iron Man came out. I love it. I love the way things are going. And we were talking about books, and
you got off track.
And I loved. I don't know, Harry Potter was my, like, Lord of the Rings. Those books still hold up. Those books are amazing. A lot of people say they're too slow. I think they're perfect. Yeah, so as you can tell, there's a lot of, like, fantasy and nerdiness in there.
Mm-hmm.
The more poignant and brilliant books are ones that, obviously, I've just not remembered the titles of.
Yeah.
One of those, like, go-to high school, like, you have to read this book, at least in America, is Catcher in the Rye, which, you know, when I was in high school, I loved that book. I haven't read it since I was in high school, but I absolutely related to it at the time. I never liked Great Gatsby or Moby Dick. Those always bored me. But then there's Chinua Achebe's Things Fall Apart, which I thought was brilliant and fascinating and just opened my eyes to a side of the world that I'd never heard of before. There's so many good books. There's great, great books out there, and I wish I read more. Because I read a lot of comic books now because they're quick and they're
easy. I've read so many books, I can't even remember most of them.
Right?
Like,
I feel like I could fill a library with the books I've read and the number that I actually remember and could tell you the plot details of. Or
it's just, they just kind of, like, I think it's just the really special ones stick with you.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned The Virgin Suicides, and that's a book that has definitely stayed with me since I read it. And I know it's down there somewhere, and I would love to reread it.
Absolutely.
What about, like, overall favorite, like, TV shows?
Ooh.
There's got to be some there.
Yeah. I think that, like, it's going to be a cliche answer, but Breaking Bad and The Wire are honestly the two greatest television shows I've ever seen. Nothing has come close. Like, even the great TV that's on right now, it doesn't touch it. Like, Better Call Saul is great. Game of Thrones is very good, although it's turned more into fan service and just, like, it's almost like a giant soap opera now, which it kind of always was, but it used to elevate itself a little bit more, and now to me it feels like B-level fantasy again, which is still great, and it's great that that kind of thing is allowed to even be on TV mm-hmm. right now, and I love that. Bloodline is a show I've just gotten into that I think is very, very good. Orange is the New Black is brilliant. Amazon's Transparent is a show that is, you know, as annoying as a lot of those characters can be sometimes, it touches on a lot of really true and really harsh realities. And I can't take my eyes off the screen when I watch that show. Those are, like, the ones that are doing it for me right now.
My, not looking at Star Trek because I'm a nerd for Star Trek. My favorite show is Oz, which was one of the original, like, HBO shows about men in prison.
I've heard that's fantastic.
It is.
It's on my list.
Yeah, you need to watch it.
If we're talking pure, just, like, geekdom, Doctor Who is fucking amazing. I love Doctor Who. And another one of my actor goals is to be the first American doctor.
I was going to say, you could totally be an American doctor.
I would love to be an American doctor.
You could have an Australian companion. I could totally do that role.
You know what? Me as the doctor and you as my companion actually sounds like a really good season of Doctor Who.
Yeah. I think we need to pitch this right now. Can we do that?
Why haven't we done this already?
Yeah, I know, right?
I would watch the fuck out of that show.
Yeah, I know, right? It would be pretty fucking cool.
Great, I love it. I love this already.
Yeah, I think we need to plan this, like, right now.
Okay.
Absolutely. I do have my sonic screwdrivers somewhere. I don't know where they are at the moment.
Okay, I've got mine over there, too.
Yeah. I keep my medicines in a TARDIS cookie jar.
I love that.
Yeah. That way I remember to have my medication because it's in my TARDIS.
Yeah. You feel all wibbly wobbly after.
Yeah, I was like, ugh, can doctor just come take me away right now? Yeah. Oh, but who's your favorite doctor? Everyone's got one.
I was just going to ask you the same thing.
I asked you first.
You did ask me. You beat me to it. For me, it's Tennant. But right now, Capaldi is a very close second. And I think if Series 10 delivers the way that Series 9 did, he may overtake Tennant. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
I would have to say Tennant as well. It's just, I love him so much. He's just a beautiful man.
He's super lovable. And he's so quirky and fun.
And it was so weird, like, watching David Tennant on Jessica Jones as, like, such a dark character. And I'm still there going, boy, I would so bang you anyway.
You wouldn't have to use your command me to do things powers.
Exactly. Oh, so I don't know what it is about the attractiveness of, like, that evil type characters that just make them so... Ugh.
Yeah, for some reason, him and that, and then, like, Loki. Everyone fucking loses their panties for Loki.
I was more like, yeah. I mean, I don't watch The Walking Dead anymore, but when David Morrissey was the governor, I was just like, bloody hell. Tie me up, dude. Okay. Just have me right now.
The comics fans have always been, like, way into Negan. I know that. I know he's only been in one episode of the show so far.
It's Jeffrey Dean Morgan, though.
Yeah, how about that Jeffrey Dean Morgan?
I mean, I don't watch it anymore, but I've seen the pictures. I'm like, dude, fucking hot. I mean, this hasn't turned into Marcy's men perving podcast. Stop it, Marcy. Stop it.
There's plenty of women perving podcasts. Why not have a men perving podcast?
That's why I ask a good looking man to be on the podcast.
So you can just purr.
Yeah. See, your face is going red. I can see it right now. This has gone like so off track. Awesome.
Yeah. Who cares? Yeah. I loved it about the new Ghostbusters. Is all the just like perving over Chris Hemsworth as he just sits there and is hot and does nothing for the movie.
But can we all agree, like everyone ever, that he's like one hell of a beautiful man?
It's impossible to say that he's not. Like, you have to be an idiot.
I've met the oldest Hemsworth. I think his name is Luke. While not as attractive as Chris, he's still hot. I mean, I didn't even realize he was a Hemsworth. I'm just there staring at his blue eyes going, hello, handsome. And then I notice the name. I'm like, oh, my God. No wonder.
Yeah. I got good genes going.
Yeah. What can we say? The Australians are just sexy.
It's hard to
say. Yeah. We've got the accent, we've got the looks. What more can you ask for?
So.
You've just enjoyed listening to my accent for like an hour.
Yeah, no, that's been absolutely my favorite part.
Yeah, absolutely.
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 Yeah, you need to work on that.
I'm, you know. Absolute.
Give you some... give you some Aussie accent lessons.
Aussie accent lessons.
There you go, free of charge.
Free of charge.
Free of charge.
I love it. Free of charge.
You're getting there.
Close.
Oh my god.
Not my best.
Well, maybe we'll wrap it up as a recording. We can just talk privately. No one else can listen to the other chit chat.
All right.
Can you? Excuse me. Can you let all the wonderful listeners know where they can follow you, look you up, see your stuff, and all that jazz? I mean, I know you've got like, I don't know, 20,000 like Instagram people on your thing and Twitter.
Yep.
This is like, excuse me, hands off, he's mine now.
yeah, you can follow me on Twitter or Instagram at the Justin Xavier. It's the same name in both places. You can follow my Facebook page at, I'm just Justin Xavier on there. You can watch Door to Door at thebestseriesever.com. You can listen to my podcast, which is just my book as an audiobook on SoundCloud. Just look up Justin Xavier on SoundCloud. And you'll be able to purchase Shared Room sometime around Christmas. If you're following any of those pages, I'll have more announcements later. And then it'll be on Netflix after that, so more announcements. And I think that's all I have to plug right now.
Yeah. All right. And I'll plug myself as I always do every single show. People can find me usually perving on hot men because what else is a girl to do? Of course, you can find us at supermarcy.com. You've got to remember the new Facebook page because I changed it. I believe it is just facebook.com/thesupernetwork. My Twitter is twitter.com/supermarcy. And yeah, I don't know. If people want to look me up, they can look me up. If I don't want to be friends with you, well, then fuck off. That's all I have to say. But thank you for chatting on this very special, yes, first edition of this special podcast.
It's been an honor to
You've
be here.
You've been a beautiful guest. So much. And thank you for talking about all the awesome stuff. And hopefully people feel very inspired by it.
Hopefully. You know, if that's, you know, what we accomplished here today, that's great.
Yes, and any negative feedback, do not send it because we don't want it. Thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Shrink you to your